Welcome back to another episode of Not Just NPCs Podcast. I am your host, Krios, joined always by my faithful friend, the one, the only, Sprocket.
Hello!
Today's episode is, we kind of started recording it about 10 minutes after we started talking. We started rambling and we're like, you know what, we should just start recording. So we're going to kind of jump you guys into the middle of that. And hopefully next time it won't be just in the middle of a conversation, but we'll have it more prepared. That's right. So we hope you guys enjoy this episode. A lot of random stuff in it between Spelljammer, the DM's Guide. Gosh, so Spelljammer again.
Yeah, we did talk about Spelljammer a lot. Yeah, yeah, rules. We went all over the place.
Yep. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it. And here you go.
Welcome, travelers. Hey, come in. Take a seat and pour yourself a drink as you listen to Not Just NPCs Podcast. Here's your hosts, your guides, if you will, Krios and Sprocket.
So it's called Light of Ixaris. And then, yeah. So, like, this is like the adventure. Ooh, there's a ship right there.
Oh, yeah, it's like an outline of a ship in it.
Oh, here's a bow. Yeah, so like that's the adventure, like on the back cover there.
Wow, I love that it's like holographic, like
yeah,
on the art itself, on the hard cover. Like that's really cool.
Yeah, super cool. And then Boo's Astral Menagerie.
Uh huh.
That's this little space hamster guy.
I love it.
Yeah, this is like the it's thin, but like it's enough content in it to where. Here's all of your space monsters.
Heck yeah. And robots.
Uh-huh. There's your GIFs.
Yeah.
The GIFs. The hippo people. Whatever
you call them. Dude. See, because I mean, most like
murder, book sets. A murder comet.
Oh, like, it's grinning. Oh, God. Yeah, like most like books, like hardcover books, you know, like for, well, like almost anything. D&D, Warhammer, whatever.
Yeah, they're like 60 like, bucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so I got three hardcovers. Yeah, that are special art for like, you know, what is it?
35.
That's crazy, dude. Yeah.
After, I think it was like 30 and then 35 after shipping.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
I think is the one that I found.
Yeah.
And then this is the actual adventure's guide.
I love it. It's like he's still got like the monocle with the guns. Like he looks like a professor hippo.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a whole map in the back here.
Whoa. And
I haven't tore out yet. I don't even know what that is. Oh, you know what? That's the Rock of Brawl.
Is that like the main city hub or something?
Yes, in a way. It's a, like a floating it's a floating comet
or that's asteroid. Cool.
And
they just have a city on it. I love it.
They're the main tavern that it has. Let's see if I can find it here. I believe it's called the Happy Beholder Tavern. And it's run by a beholder.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
I always like it when they make like seemingly evil like races or monsters like into like neutral NPCs.
It's a warship.
It looks like a giant like a firefly or something.
Yeah. Like it's super cool. Yeah, I'm excited to run this. That might be one of those campaigns that turns into a pretty long campaign.
Oh, which would be amazing. I mean, especially if depending on how you set up the story, right? But if just a crew on a ship that's being
controlled. I already have the intro.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm sure you do, but I'm just thinking out loud, right? Like I'm just writing in the air. So it's like, but then like eventually we get to own our own ship.
Mm-hmm.
The campaign like could really open up because then we could literally go anywhere, which again, like you said, all of a sudden, you know, 6 month campaign turns into like 2 years if we're all having enough fun and enjoying our characters and stuff.
Like, well, that's easily, the thing. Bro. Like you don't enjoy your character after a while. Just be like, I really want to play something else. I'm like, I can kill you guy. I mean, I can kill him off.
That's true. I mean, that's what happened with, you know, Scanlan in Vox Machina. Just eventually Sam was like, you know what? I don't think he fits the party. I'm not having fun with him, but I think it makes a good story reason why he'd leave out. And that way I could play something new. And
yeah, exactly. You can do that too. Just have him like leave the campaign for a valid reason and then bring someone else in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was heartbreaking and really cool at the same time.
Yeah, I think for Spelljammer, what will go from like level 1 to 20 or something.
Oh, hell yeah.
And like it'll be a slow crawl. Like you'll be at level 1 for a while type of a thing.
That's cool. Well, that just leaves a lot more like actual like character development, I feel like. And you can flesh out your world because we're not just trying to ramp up becoming like little munchkins and try to get as high as level as we can kind of thing.
Yeah, and I've learned a lot too DMing over the years now, which I mean I haven't even been doing it that long, 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
And especially when I ran that homebrew with you guys the first time. That was my first homebrew full on campaign.
Yeah.
I've done like a homebrew that was like a couple sessions long before.
Yeah.
More than a one shot, but not quite a campaign.
Yeah, sure.
But I wrote the whole story out. I was like, okay, here's where this is going to be. This, I'm going to have to make sure I guide them here. Like that was so wrong. Like, oh my gosh, what was I doing?
Well, you were also playing, I mean, we were all new to it too. All new to the, like full long campaign too. So, I mean, like I told you before, it's like, I was so immersed with my character, my druid and trying to, get into his head that I wasn't picking up on the subtle hints where you're like
nudging you, railroading almost
because I was too busy worried about what he's going through with his uncle being gone and all that stuff. So it worked to me. It was fine.
I think obviously. At least for myself, I think what I'm going to have to do so I don't do that is not plan anything, not anything, but like, of course I'll have the first, you know, session or two planned out to get us going.
Of course.
But then after that, just let you guys run it and be like, where you guys want to go? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then really practice making stuff up on the fly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's the only way that I'm going to get super good at doing that is if we just do it. You know, it might be a little bit slower. Like, okay, let me think a second. Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have a pretty creative mind. Like I've tried to make a bunch of board games before.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. And the problem with it is I get to like, I do it. And then I get to a point where I run into like a roadblock. I'm like, I can't get past this mentally.
Yeah.
I can't think of what the next step is or what am I missing? And then I just like stopped working on that. And then I never come back to it until like 3 years later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing too. It's like, you could always like try to, it's a writer's block technique that, of course, I can't think of like the official name of it or anything. You can like try to like very loosely, right? Like don't like really assign them much of anything other than like maybe like a name and a description of like NPCs. And then that way, if you don't want to make one up on the fly, you'd have like a list. And that way, instead of
For sure.
Yeah, and that way, instead of like, you have the obviously the main ones for your story that we will run into and become a big part of, you know, our characters' lives, and then you have such and such person went off down an alleyway and picked a fight for no reason with like three people, and bam, you've got a list to be like, all right, I have these random thugs' names and what they look like without you having
who are they working for now?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and you can have like a very loose, and then you just build upon that without having to stop.
I'll have a story at least, like a campaign arc.
Of
like, okay, this is who I want my big, bad, evil person to be.
100%.
And this is who's underneath that. Like, I'll have that stuff flushed out. But as far as you're going to this spot is your next mission, you need to go there. No, I'm not even going to flesh that out. Like, I'll have stuff ready, especially now since I'm working on building my own DM screen. Uh-huh. And I'm to the point where I need to wood burn now. I have to create what I want to wood burn.
Which
I'm just going to throw our logo on the front, I think.
Oh,
just
cool.
The picture without the words.
Yeah.
That way, I like the picture. I think it'll look cool on the front. On the backside, for what I see, I'm literally going to wood burn the stuff that would be on a regular DM screen.
That's cool.
So that way it's permanently there. And then I'll have a magnet strip up top where I can still put things over top of it.
Sheets and stuff.
So like I'm in the process right now of using Canva to go through and make what I want to wood burn on there. Skills and ability checks, the DC for setting things, exhaustion, combat things, like all that. Like I've been watching YouTube videos and reading articles and be like, okay, what do people find the most useful? Because I want it to be useful and not just like junk.
Yeah. And you don't want to like, just fill it up for the sake of filling it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, and then like with Spelljammer, like, yeah, I'm going to run that campaign probably for a while, but I'm not always going to be in Spelljammer. So I feel like maybe if I put anything on there, it's like how far a ship can travel in a day.
Sure.
Compared to like walking, running, stagecoach, horse, all that stuff. Just add like a ship in there and then a Spelljammer ship. When I run the campaign, I'll just make up another piece of paper and then put that right over on top on the little magnetic strip. And then when I need to, just lift it up and look underneath it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
so like I'm basically, instead of having four DM screens, I have eight now.
Right. And that's the thing is like, thankfully, since it's still all done by like Wizard of the Coast and it's in the D&D world, at least the core rules will be the same. Obviously, I haven't read it. So
there are some different things.
Yeah, I know it changes.
Like exhaustion is completely changed now.
Okay.
And so like I have to look, like, that's the other thing. Like I'm going through the DM's guide and the player's handbook right now and seeing like, okay, what tables do they have in there that I might want or think I need?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know the weapons and stuff are all probably going to be different. I mean, well, you would imagine with it being, again, like in space.
And that's the thing where like, I don't think I'm going to put that on my DM screen, like how much things cost, but maybe just a piece of paper on the side or like a Word doc on my computer. Cause I'll have a computer the whole time too. Now I put a monitor in the front of the DM screen. So that way I can display images and combat initiative tracker.
Which is so useful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be so super nice. My goal is to have it done before we start back up in January.
Yeah. Well, you having that up when we were doing that big fight with in the city.
Yeah. Yeah. Test it out just on the screen.
Yeah. With Scott and everything. Oh my God. That was huge. Cause there were so many groups each one of us was dealing with. And it was good for, I know it was huge for you because there was so much going on. It was huge for us too. Cause that way we can kind of figure out how we were tackling what and imagining it versus like being like, yeah, you're just surrounded by 40 people. Good luck. It's like, okay. You know, so it made it a lot. It did make combat a lot faster, which was your goal. Yep. And I think it totally worked.
The program that I used for that, I found it on Patreon.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It syncs with D&D Beyond. It's by, I think his name's Evan Bailey. It's called Improved Initiative Combat Tracker for D&D 5e. And literally like $20 for the whole year.
Oh, that's not bad.
No. It looks like I can.
That's crazy handy, especially if you know you're going to be doing a long campaign like we are. It makes sense.
Yep. And I think that's the membership I have right now, but it looks like there's an epic tier that I could do for $8 per month, whatever that adds up to per year. Yeah, I don't think I needed that one because that one allowed me to put in screenshots, I believe.
Oh.
So like when we're playing and like we go to the next person in initiative order, their picture would come up on the screen as well.
Oh,
I was like, I don't necessarily need that. I don't think personally, especially since I'm running that other system that I have all of my backgrounds and stuff for, I could probably dual screen it and have both of those going at the same time and do it myself.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And for the screen is I went on Etsy and not only do I also on Patreon pay for artwork by James's RPG art, animated fantasy scenes. It's that he has some great, I love his stuff. And every month he comes out with four new ones, I believe.
That's a lot of work.
It is. It's like one a week, basically.
Yeah,
and
that's a lot.
It's a whole image. He has a day version and a night version. And depending on like what tier you're in, depends on which versions you get. So like I picked the highest tier and I also picked it before he upped his prices.
Yeah.
Which honestly though, it's super cheap still. Sure. I got in at $4.
Holy crap, really?
So that's per image. And so if you figure out four images a month, that's $16 a month I pay.
Okay.
I did the $4 version, which I think is $6 now. I did that $4 version because I get the day and nighttime images, like still image. And then there's also an animated image that's day and nighttime, which isn't like it's not like people walking or anything like that. But like, let's say you're looking at a city, you might see lights flickering on and off type of thing. Okay. Or if it's just like in the fantasy landscape, he has like this, it doesn't look like snow, but it's like like things like glistening in the air type of thing. It's so it brings it more to, it brings the image to life basically.
Yeah.
Or like if there's a ship or a boat, the sails might be like swaying in the wind just a little bit.
Yeah.
So something like that, just like these little tiny things that just bring the image to life. And I was like, oh, that's just super cool.
And agreed.
So, yeah. So I pay for that. But then I was like, you know what? I bet Etsy's got some stuff I could find. I didn't even go looking. I was looking for like my Christmas list to like put things on. And I hopped on Etsy, of course. And I came across backgrounds. And I was like, oh, man. I found one that was 3,500 background images.
Oh, my goodness.
For like $11. And so I bought it. And then there was another one, same thing, for like $11. So I bought that one. Turns out they were the same exact thing.
Yeah.
That was being sold by the same guy on two different accounts. And I was like, dude, you just scammed me. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, right.
And he's like, I'm not trying to. I'm sorry. And so he sent me my money back for one because I paid for the same thing twice, basically.
Yeah.
So super nice of him to do that.
Yeah.
But then I was going through his images and they're just not that good. They're definitely AI generated. Oh. Like some of them, like they look too real because I like more of the animated feel to it a little bit.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And so they're like, it's literally like a picture of a field with a fence and a barn in the background that you took, you know, standing in your backyard or something like with an actual camera. I was like, that's not really what I want.
You could just Google that. I mean, that's exactly. Not that
and then he does have, I haven't gone through all, cause I mean, 3,500, like, I'm just like, I don't even know if I want, like, maybe I'll just waste.
See, that makes sense why there's so many. Cause he probably did. He probably either took some himself, ripped off a bunch of others that aren't copyright or had AI generate just a billion of them.
Yeah. Because there are some that are animated and they're okay. They're not bad. Sure. Like I can use them. But then I found a third one that was only like 150 images for like $4 or something. I was like, heck yeah. And that one's more the style of the one that I have on Patreon right now. And so I was like, that's perfect. So I went and downloaded all of those. They're not animated. They're just a still image, which is fine. But it gives me more variety and options to use to put up.
Yeah.
I was going through it. I was like, oh, the first one I came across was this abandoned amusement park. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like some of it's more modern, abandoned subway, which I'm like, okay, you know, depending on your fantasy setting, you can use it or not, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe if we're doing Spelljammer, you come across a world that's really high and advanced in technology. Like, cause he had cyberpunk stuff too.
Oh,
and like,
cool.
How crazy would it be for you guys to enter that world? Like, whoa. Like,
yeah. 100%.
And so I could easily use that stuff if I wanted to. But the one I came across was abandoned amusement park. So it had like circus tents, a roller coaster in the background, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is a cool one. I don't know if I'd really use it. But then I started thinking more about it. And I was like, you know what? I could easily use this. Because in Spelljammer, there is an enemy or a monster or whatever you want to call them that is literally called space clowns.
Oh.
And I was like, This is their home base. It's done. It's dead. I'm done. Like, we're going to encounter space clowns. You're going to have to go to their home base. And this is going to happen.
I love it. Well, because I know the original Spelljammer was like written like in the whatever it was.
Early
80s. Yeah. So, I mean, if they were, or late 80s maybe, because I know when they originally wrote it, obviously there was a lot of inspiration about some of the other stuff, but it would make sense though to even have like Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which also came out in the 80s, be mixed in there. Like one of them saw it, you know, and it's just like, bro, we could do this as just a villain. Like just random space clowns. Like everyone hates clowns, you know?
Yeah, they have space vampires as well.
Of course. Yeah. That's the best thing about like, coming from a fantasy setting to a sci-fi setting, you'd almost just slap space in front of anything and it would just work. Like it just, you know, it's because it's all fantasy. So it's just like, all right, yeah, maybe they have, you have to design their ships and their home world or whatever, but well, they're vampires. They're just in space, just like you are. Like, who cares? Like, you know, like once you like put down your preconceptions that sci-fi has to be a certain thing, you could just do anything with it, which is so much fun.
Yeah.
I love it.
So I'm excited to get that screen done and start using it for you guys.
Yeah dude, absolutely, that's gonna be freaking amazing.
I really am excited for Spelljammer.
Yeah, me too.
It got a lot of flack though when they came out the new
why
one. I think mostly because of the ship to ship combat.
They just like changed it so much compared to the old rules or something.
I have no idea. It sounds like it's just not good.
People
have already homebrewed some other ideas.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm just like, you know what? Who cares that one little thing is wrong with it?
Yep.
Why? I'm sorry, but D&D players out there, you guys get so picky about things sometimes.
Oh,
especially the hardcore fans.
Yep.
Love you, but chill out.
Yeah, I know.
It's just, it's there to give you a starting guide. It's not set in stone.
Yeah, it's a structure.
It's not
meant
to be a, I don't know.
A diehard way you have to play the game. I mean, that's the best part about it is, like you don't like that thing, then change it. I mean,
That I struggle with that though when it comes to the modules that they come out with, like Curse of Strahd.
Oh, sure.
Wild Beyond the Lich, like all those ones.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I feel like I have to run it by the book.
And yeah, because they're very like specific. Yeah.
Not just because they're specific, but mentally, my brain is just wired. I cannot deviate from this.
Oh, I see. This is the plan. Yeah.
It's just like, this is what it needs to be. We're running a module. And so it's a module. It's not homebrew. I cannot mix them. And I'm slowly getting to, okay, what am I doing again?
Yeah.
I can totally mix them. It's okay.
Absolutely.
As long as we're having fun, there's nothing wrong.
Exactly. So when me and my dad, I mean, obviously 40K, I promise this loops back to the rules stuff we're talking about.
I mean, at this point, we're talking about random everything.
Yeah,
so true. It doesn't even have to loop back.
Fans could just calm down, you know, especially like D&D, because it's like in 40K, a lot of people, there's new rules, and in the last few years, they've been updates and changes, like digitally, to try to balance stuff out, which is really cool. When me and my dad play, they drop a new edition like every couple of years, and my dad, because there's so many rules for every army that you have to keep track of, sometimes my dad gets really overwhelmed, and me and my dad learned when I played it in high school, okay, well, if we don't like how this is done with this particular way of combat, then let's just make up our own in-house way to do it.
For sure.
And let's just do it like that. And like we played last year, man, some of these new close combat rules, he's like, I just don't get it. I'm like, Dad, okay, well, this is 10th edition. You and me have 3rd edition perfectly memorized. Let's just do 3rd edition close combat rules. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like we're not in a tournament. It's not official. No one's going to come in here and slap us, you know, or something. It's like,
what are you doing?
Yeah. How dare you? You need to follow the book. You know, D&D is the same way. I mean, okay, yeah, they brought new rules, which is exciting and fun that they're updating stuff and bringing stuff out, trying to give it some love. But hell, man, if you don't like exactly the way XYZ is done, you don't have to do it. Go back to 5th edition. I know some people absolutely hated 5th edition for its combat and stuff. Okay, well, then don't do that.
Yeah,
tweak it. Change it how you want to. I know most people make potions, like free actions and stuff. That's like a common homebrew rule that D&D has never accepted in the official rule books.
They have it now.
Oh, well, of course, now they do. Yeah. After I say that, of course.
I'm pretty sure. But I have not. Okay. I have not gone through the entire...
Which I haven't read it at all, in my defense.
The entire DM's Guide. I do have the new Player's Handbook and DM's Guide. They have been released as of now. I'm still waiting on that Monster Manual a couple months here.
Yeah, I need to buy the Player's
Handbook. And which, once that comes out, man, I'm popping on more episodes.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I have it in front of me, so sorry if you hear the pages turning.
It's an ASMR then, man. People like that. We talk them out.
There you go. Pretty sure they have in here, they have creating a magic item, creating a spell, curses and magic contagion death. They have a whole page just on doors.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's there as a excellent guide for everyone to be on the same page about, but you don't need a guide for doors. You know how a door works. If you want to make a door bigger or heavier, how it opens differently, just do it. That's the best part about D&D.
Go to the door page now.
Just
sidetracked from making magic stuff.
Yeah, well, that's how this works. It's like,
no.
Just change how you want to do a door. Oh,
yeah, they have the door and its AC, its hit points, the DC to open it, and then to lock pick it. I never read the first DM's guide fully, and so some of this could easily have been in there. The door part was not, I'm pretty sure. At least not to this extent.
About doors. Yeah.
But they have secret doors. Oh, what's the DC to detect the secret door? It's a barely hidden secret door. The DC's 10. Oh, if it's hidden, it's 20. And then in between.
Yeah, see, it's just a guide. I mean, if somebody wants to focus more on the story and not care about doors, he's got a page for all the door stats if he wants now. Or you can just wing it if you want to. People get that way with 40K. Of course, people get that way with 40K, though, also because of tournaments and they get really competitive. But man, if you're just playing in a game shop with people that you're cool with or your family like I do.
Or at a table at home.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's cool. As long as you both discuss it and agree, then it's fine. Like, you don't have to go on the internet and start a Reddit and then begin the hate spewing, you know, which I feel like happens, unfortunately, a lot in a lot of IPs that we both really enjoy, unfortunately.
I'm pretty sure there's a section somewhere, maybe it's in the other book, or maybe I'm just entirely wrong, but like creating, was it potions? Is that what we're talking about?
I was talking about using a potion.
Using it makes, okay.
People give it.
It might have been a spell that I read actually, of where you can create a potion a day.
Yeah,
and it's like a cauldron or something.
Artificers, they have an alchemist class, and they can make a special potion.
Okay.
They can make like a super special potion, which has all kinds of stats to it. Yeah. Like a day, as one person a long time ago that I read. Yeah, but if you take an action to use this potion, then the potion's not as cool as they think it is, because it's taking up an action and it's not giving you as much benefit as if this was a free action or a bonus action, rather, because it does give you stats. So sorry. So instead of making this like a bonus action to drink, and then you still have your action, do whatever now with the potion buffing you, because it doesn't last very long. Certain tweaks like that. Yeah, that totally makes sense. So just do that. You know, if the DM agrees and your player is trying to have fun with their alchemist, then just do that.
There's a whole new rule where the bonus action now is to take a drink a potion. They added that. They're like, instead of making it an action, it's now a bonus action. You know, they tested it out on Baldur's Gate 3, basically.
I was just about to say,
For so many years, people just had that homebrewed into their own games. And they finally listened to people and like, all right, let's just do it.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Because people are just going to play that way anyways, so what does it matter? It's funny. It's just funny when rules get changed. It's because people passionate and they care, but also it's like they get kind of carried away. It's just funny when you make little changes, and if one person doesn't like it, all of a sudden 3,000 people don't like it online. Oh, okay. Or you could just not do it that way. That's fine, too. Yeah, man. Yeah, I need to buy the new player's manual. Speaking of
books. You don't have that yet? And stuff, do you have the...
I don't.
You do have any of them yet?
No.
See, I bought them when they were doing their sale for...
Yeah.
The pre-order? That was another thing. People are like, is it even worth it? Some people are like, no, it's not. Blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, dude, I want it. I'm getting it.
Right.
I don't care what you think.
Yeah.
I don't care if there's been one word that's been changed in it. I want it.
Right. Well, there was a lot of people that are doing that with, because... I know, like you said, like a lot of the older fans hate all the new digital stuff, like D&D Beyond, and that's where a lot of stuff's going. You can just buy all the books and stuff on D&D Beyond.
Yep.
So then people are like, well, why am I just going to buy the prints? Like, well, because you're maybe just a fan and you enjoy the books. That's why I do.
Oh, see.
Man, like every time certain 40K books and stuff come out and they change stuff, I mean, all the rules are even online. People will just post rules online of all these armies and stuff, and I still throw down the $50 to buy that book, because I'm a fan. I just love the book. I just love the art. I love the stories in them. Like, I want to see them, have them in my hands.
Yeah, so I'm the generation that grew up with physical copy things.
Yeah,
that about halfway through my life, then the technology really started to hit.
Yeah.
I think by the time I was in high school is when we started using laptops in class.
Yeah,
and that was like the last 2 years of my high school, I think.
Yeah.
And nowadays, like, it's all digital, digital, digital.
Oh, big time.
And so, like, 100%. I'm not stupid, obviously. Like, I'm still young enough to know how to work digital things and how to.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we're doing a freaking podcast, for crying out loud.
Right.
I enjoy the physical copies still.
100%.
I am a physical person. When I DM, I like physical things. And so creating this DM screen that I'm building, where there's a screen in it, and now I'm gonna have to work off my laptop behind it. I don't know if I want to do this. Like, I like the physical. I like to look at the physical things, not a computer screen. But I also have so many tabs open.
Oh,
I
mean, 100%.
I got my music. I got the notes. I have character sheets and your passives and all, like, it's just a ton of stuff. Monster stat block. It's so much that it's so hard to have all of that behind a screen in physical copy.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, in a much lesser extent for like players too, especially play like a spell caster class, you're not going to have the book, which just has just an index in the back of all the spells you can have. And you need to know the rank versus which charts over in your character, your class page, you know, in the book. And that's why it's like, oh, in your character sheet, you can hand write it down. Holy Lord. I mean, if you're like a wizard or like a high level druid, hand write down every possible spell you could have. Forget it, bro. That's why D&D Beyond came around and people were like, yes, please, love of God. But most of us do. Just do both. Like, I still have the books on the table, and then I have my D&D Beyond screen up to help me manage quickly my characters and my stats. And I'm not quite sure how this should work. I like cracking open the book and finding it for myself, you know.
Which in the new book, they have a whole glossary section for that thing.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's in the DM. In the DM's guide, there's a whole rules index glossary that you just flip to what you want to know. And there's a little tiny paragraph about that.
Yeah. See,
rather than having to find the page and stuff.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to, in a good way, compete with D&D Beyond too. It's like,
yeah.
All right, we hear you. It's hard to find stuff in the old books. Let's make it a little easier. You know, talking about like in the physical, I do the same thing for art stuff too. Like I love the art of D&D and fantasy and 40K. And people are like, oh yeah, I've got Pinterest and Instagram. And it's like, that's true. You have a lot of these super cool ways to look at art for free, especially stuff that people come up with brand new, which is super cool. I also love having just this giant, thick, unnecessary book on my bookshelf that's just filled with art. Uh-huh. I mean, that's why I bought the Time magazine for D&D.
Yeah.
I bought it for the art. Like,
even just to look at the spine really cool of the book.
Yeah. Like, I really do like it. Like, I think it's cool just to flip open and just have all this art. Like, I like having that physically with us. I guess that ages us maybe. maybe that puts us at a certain age range, I guess. But it's just, I love the physical stuff. Also, with the digital, like I like both. Why do we have to get rid of one or the other? Let's just use them both.
Yeah, going back to what you said about finding spells on D&D Beyond easily, that reminds me that improved initiative that I use for tracking combat.
Yeah.
That has on it to where, I don't know if it's the tier that I have or if it's that upgraded tier that I need to do where I can, I think it's the upgraded one where I can sync to where if you have a character sheet on D&D Beyond, I can just transfer it right into my improved initiative.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't have to do it. Otherwise, I would have to just make it myself, which I probably will just do because I'm cheap.
Well, and there's not many of us in our party, honestly, right? We don't have a lot of players, so it's not a huge thing.
Yep. And then you can also add all the D&D monsters in there and their stat blocks. I'm curious to see, though, with the new monster manual, how much stat blocks are going to change on some of them. Mm-hmm. And if the guy's going to go, that's a lot of work, man. Go back and edit all of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can create your own monsters in there too. Your own little, little things. Anyways. But, what I was wanted to say was underneath, if once I have like a monster up, you click the next button for, okay, now it's this person's turn in combat and it pulls them up on like my screen that I get to see, because you guys only see the same screen. For combat, you know, you get to see the health, but not the numbers. More of like, oh, he's healthy, he's hurt, he's bleeding, he's dead.
Right.
That's like the way it should be. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So on my screen, I see the whole stat block. And then underneath it, if they have any spells, it's a hyperlink that I can click on it and it'll pull that spell right up. It makes it nice for combat when I'm like, oh man, I don't. Because beforehand, I would have to go and look up all the spells before we started the evening, even.
Or
the combat that might happen.
Yeah, right.
And then I would just write down, okay, this is AC, DC, here we go. All right, here's the distance. All right, it's going to do this damage. Like, just the quick snippets, not the whole paragraph, so I knew what it kind of did. So when we got into combat, I'm like, okay, I want to do a damage of area of effect damage. Okay, which one of these? Okay, this one does it and this one does it. Okay, let's do this one. And then go back and find it in the book and do it. That's a lot nicer having it like that too. And you can roll dice right on the screen. Like you click a button and it really says, you rolled a 4. D&D Beyond does that, I know, but it's just the fact that it's all on one screen.
Right. Yeah, which I know, again, we liking the physical. I mean, we roll our own dice. I mean,
yeah, I'm a
dice goblin anyways. So
yeah, I think combat though, I might start just using that just out of quickness.
Yeah, because combat does take a while.
Yeah, and it's no fun to watch me roll dice and do things in a combat. No,
it's part of it.
Yeah,
no,
it is. But
you're in your own way. I mean, you're a player just like we are. So it's like you have to sit there and watch us roll dice. So we're watching you roll dice. It's just it's part of the experience, you know.
Yeah, but it makes it quicker because then, like, as soon as I roll it, I can click apply damage to this person. Like I would click the error name and then just click apply and then it knocks it right off.
Yeah. And you just move right along.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
rather
than having to type it in, which you can do also.
Which is really cool. That's like one of the very few times you could argue is, I guess, metagaming a little bit. When it comes like when we're in combat, and because everyone has so much that their characters can do, it's a lot to try to memorize your stuff, much less, you know, 4+ party members are also capable of doing.
Oh, I don't even attempt.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. That's what I'm saying.
If I'm DMing, you are in charge of your character. I'm sorry. Well, that's my point. If this is rude, I'm sorry, but like you need to come and know what your spells are, how they work,
yeah,
and what they do, because I have way too much stuff that I have to figure out myself.
Well, yeah. Well, so that's my point. It's like, not just for you. That would be a lot for anybody to do. So that's why I was telling our other team party members who are joining us that were new for the first time. Hey, just know what you do. When your turn comes up, just know your spells, your ability, because there's a lot. You've got a lot going on. Yep. I've got a lot going on. I don't expect you to know almost anything about my character other than what you know from the story. That's when I think, like I said, this is where I was getting at. What I consider to be maybe a little bit of metagaming is in combat, where normally the characters wouldn't have time to talk, is a little time where you can say, what are you about to do? What does that do? Because that helps you then figure out. And I know probably some people are really against that. There's so much happening, and I'm not going to memorize everybody, and I expect nobody to memorize my stuff, that I think it's okay to talk about it and be able to say stuff about each other's
questions,
spells.
Of course, I'm not going to be like, no, I'm sorry, you need to figure that out. I'll gladly help you because I want to make sure you're having fun and getting it right.
Oh,
and I
just
can't be doing that every single turn.
Oh, exactly.
Every single
I don't think we should come up with like a diehard plan on the spot with each other, like how to defeat the bad guy. But if, hey, I'm going to cast this on you, will that mess you up or something? I think it's a lot more forgivable. If you cast Sanctuary on somebody, then they immediately attack. Well, that was a blown bullshit. You know, why did I even cast this? If you didn't know what that did, because you don't have to deal with that spell, that makes more sense. And we could talk about that kind of thing.
Yeah, but then there's also the aspect of like when you're low level doing these things, it's kind of like your party learning how each other fights in combat too. So it's like, okay,
100%.
Maybe you let them cast that spell and you don't let them ask the question and you let them learn, and you could do it that way as well.
Sure.
But I think it depends on your group, if they're okay with that or if they'd rather, if that's just going to make them mad.
Oh, yeah. Well, like always, I think it's up to the group and how they want to play and what everybody agrees on. I mean, that was one reason why when my artificer picked up the mind reading, which now I'm totally blanking on, telepathy, right? Yeah, telepathy.
Oh, like the actual spell?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm a big D&D fan.
I'm not actually looking up.
I don't know any spells by memorization. Yeah. Misty Step, well, I can tell you that one.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's a start. Yeah, no.
I had that one for my very first warlock I created.
Yeah, but like when I picked that up as a feat, when we leveled, the next day I literally used it as part of the story to show the party that I had that ability so that I could use it without that shocking them or like freaking them out or whatever. Like I made it part of the story that I introduced that, hey, this is something I can do now. I've been working on XYZ. I feel like the more you get to do that in a story is kind of like really aids to, oh yeah, he could do that or she could do this in combat or whatever. Now that time of talking about it's been cut out in combat. I mean,
yeah. And so backtracking a little bit to having too much to do behind the DM screen, you guys figuring out your own characters in combat, saying, hey, what does that look like? What does your spell look like? Rather than me having to tell you what it looks like and figuring out where it's going to hit the monster and what it looks like on the monster, you can do that. Obviously, you're not going to be like, hey, it's a giant blue ball, bolt of lightning, and it takes off his left arm. So now he can't fight with his left arm. Like, okay, come on. Like, really?
Right.
It hits his left arm. It doesn't take it off. There's a big gash in it. If the DM wants to allow it to actually happen like that, that's cool. But like, obviously not every time.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's like if, especially if someone's like really customized and they really like to go the extra distance of making their attacks feel that way.
Yep.
For example, clerics and their spiritual weapons, right? Literally anything based on their religion or their personality. When you ask them, okay, you summon your spiritual weapon, what does it look like? Versus you just take it right default out of the book. Okay, well, a magical mace appears and it hits this person. All right, what does your spiritual weapon look like? And then they get to explain what it looks like and how it attacks, which just adds to the fun, man. Like, that's just part of the creativity of it, I think.
Plus, it doesn't take away ideas in my own brain of how my enemies are going to attack you guys. Because after a while, okay, let's see, I've used this. I'm running out of ideas in my brain right now of how to make this look cool. He attacks, next person, go.
right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's so much different ways to make combat fun like that by making it more personalized. It's like a lot of people forget, it's like there's not just the role-playing aspect when you're doing dialogue and being political. Actually, in combat, you can have a lot of fun with it too. Like, it's not just rolling the dice and hope you don't die. You know, you can do a lot of stuff in combat that makes it feel like you, like your character.
This is another problem that I have. I do like a module like Curse of Strahd we're doing, and you guys still have at least 3 locations to go to, plus the castle.
Yeah.
It's still going to be a couple months at least, if not longer.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. Yeah.
And I'm ready to be like, okay, let's just quit and start Spelljammer. Let's go. Like, I am ready.
Well, you were feeling that way at the end of your first homebrew campaign with us.
Yep.
Because we were, and we were also losing people, which was making it a lot harder to push forward in our campaign.
I just get so excited about what's next.
Yes. And you're like, I'm ready for Curse of Strahd. This needs to wrap up because I'm ready for Curse of Strahd.
That's I get like that. And I'm like, okay, calm down. Relax. It's going to be there. It's going to still be there in a year.
Oh, yeah. We got to actually go to a physical location. We got in a few more people that are like so much better than what we were using, who we had with us before. Sorry for you people out there. But, you know,
it was one
we
person.
Upgraded our players. We did. And I'm not sorry about it because we did.
Yeah.
It'd be cool that once now our feet are wet to kind of go in again after Strahd.
Yeah, because two of the people well, your fiance now too, she was new to it too, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Brand new.
Everyone was really still learning in our group. And it doesn't feel like they're learning to me at this point.
Oh, no.
It feels like they've gotten it down now. They understand the mechanics. And now it's just more of, wait, what's this spell do? Oh,
yeah.
It's less of, can I do this? I mean, that's still there, here and there, but.
Yeah. I'll tell you, when I ran the Marvel one shot, I mean, between you three, and it was both of them in there that were new to our Strahd campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, once I was like, okay, this is the intro, go. I mean, you guys just ran with it. That was a brand new system. And of course, you are not surprised that, you know, you took it and just ran. They were the same way. Like, they barely asked me any questions other than combat, which is always different.
Which was different. That was totally different.
Very different.
Combat.
It was very different.
It was interesting.
Other than that, they just ran with it. Okay, we're ready to do this. We're ready to talk to this person. There was no hesitation. And that was really fun to see them grow as players to be like that. So I'm excited for Strahd to pick back up. And
yeah, I am too.
And then Spelljammer, of course.
Gosh, I'm to the point where I'm like, okay, you know, we do meet every other week. What if we do Spelljammer in between?
Well, I'll tell you, right when we start talking about the Spelljammer books and stuff, I did buy a set on eBay. So I
love it.
I have a set already literally in the works to come to my house. So
of the one with alternative cover?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. After you showed it to me and broke it down, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is, I think it was like you said, it was like $40.
Yeah.
Like,
it wasn't bad at all.
100% worth. Once those come in and I start reading them, I will already be working on a character. 1,000%.
If it's from the same guy that I bought it from, which it probably is, it did not take really long. Like, he was super quick. He or she, they were super quick with the shipping.
Yeah.
Like, it came right in.
Yeah. I will read those, especially since now I know that they're not nearly as big. And I will immediately start thinking of character combos. And of course, I don't know about, I'll start like rough drafting backstories, but I don't know what our restrictions is. So we have done a session.
Yeah.
Zero,
so. And that we're actually going to have to do a zero session, and it's probably going to be like, we're going to meet in person, and it's going to be like 4 hours that we meet because
absolutely.
It's almost like a new system just because of the ship combat.
And 100%.
I think we're going to homebrew the ship combat too, to an extent how ships fly. Yeah. I mean, a long time from now, by the time we get into this, hopefully by then we'll be live streamed. Well, maybe not live streamed. At least
we'll be live streamed.
I don't think we'll be live.
Yeah, maybe we'll have our own Twitch channel. Yeah. We'll be
recording by then, hopefully, our actual sessions and posting them.
Yeah.
Not a live stream, but a stream.
Oh, not I see. Live,
whatever those are called.
An
episode, I guess.
I think VODs, right?
I don't know.
They're just VODs. Videos on demand.
VODs. It sounds so fancy.
I think just VODs.
VODs. Well, let's make a VOD.
Let's make a VOD.
Let's put it next to that VOS over there.
Yeah. Let's make a VOD and a VOS. I love it.
When I did that D&D weekend away with my other buddies, and we just played D&D for like 3 days.
Yeah, traitorous. Not hurt by it at all. Go ahead.
A bunch of one shots. We did 3 1 shots, and I ran one, and then I participated in two. One of them was hilarious. It was called Killer Kobolds. We were literally kobolds that would get sent down to a planet, and then we would just have to kill things, like people. So like, we were the bad guys.
And you were definitely the bad guys, I'd say.
We were blowing up, and then like, when you died, you just, another one, it's kind of like Helldivers, where just another body gets sent down, but it's a different one.
It would just send another kobold to
replace It was so, I went into it, I'm like, man, I don't think I'm gonna like this. I left with it, I'm just like laughing, like loving it. Like, it was great.
It's amazing.
Definitely, you got to have the right group for it.
Oh, 100%.
Anyways, yeah. The other campaign was an actual campaign, Keys of the Golden Vault. And my buddy ran that one because it's a one shot. People really don't care what you play or run. I ran a rogue, and I was a Hadazi rogue, which is a spell jammer.
Oh, I was just about to ask.
It's a monkey.
Oh, okay. Basically,
in essence, it's just a monk. It's a monkey man.
That's cool.
It had this ability to where if it fell more than 10 feet, it's got like wings on the back where I could like stretch out my arms and I could like glide 10 feet down and not take any damage from the fall.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So like I could fall like 100 feet and then glide the last 10 feet and totally I'm fine.
Yeah.
But I was and because I'm a monkey, I'm ambidextrous. I had a bow and arrow that I used and shot with my feet at one point.
Yeah.
Because I was on like the ceiling. I was basically every combat, I was climbing up the wall on the ceiling.
Yeah.
And then attacking from up there.
I love it.
Because that's so I was cool. I'd hide in the shadows of the ceiling. Things like that. Yeah. And I had so much fun playing. I was like, this was so much fun. There was the big bad evil guy that was in it. We made like really short backstories for it. And it was that guy. Basically, my backstory was I was, you know, of course, being a monkey, I was tested on.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, typical Guardians of the Galaxy 3
movie. I was just about to say very Rocket Raccoon.
Which I just watched, by the way, after built my character. So yeah. So basically we were going through and found his laboratory and he had a bunch of vials. And so I took a vial and I held on to it. And then we heard him coming. And so I climbed up on the wall and hid on the ceiling. And I asked, I was like, did I grab a syringe by chance? He goes, there were no syringes. What he did, though, was he gave us each this gold coin for the one shot that we could give to him and say, I came prepared for this moment. I have a syringe now. Oh, man, like I need a rope for this scenario, but nobody has a rope. Well, I came prepared. So here you go. I had bought a rope from the store ahead of time.
You cash it in. That's cool.
Yeah. And I was like, this is a great idea. Like even for especially for a one shot. Here's my gold coin. I came prepared for this moment that when I came across my arch nemesis who tested on me, that I would have a syringe that I could inject back into him. I have the syringe. I was like, I take the vial and I put it in the syringe and I drop from the ceiling, land on top of him, like, and look him dead in the eyes. And I said something cool. And
absolutely.
And I took the syringe. At least it was cool to me.
Right.
And I took the syringe. I'm going to attempt to stab him and inject him with we didn't know what it did. All we knew was that he had tested on creatures in the lab already. And two of them it worked on, and they were like this massive like monkey monster now. And so I was like, this could be really bad or really good. I don't know. I rolled and I hit and I injected it with a like, and it was great. It was for like story moment wise. It felt like a campaign moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So, dude, which is so awesome.
Yeah. Like, so I was like that character that I made, it was just super cool. Super fun.
Yeah.
If we don't stop talking though, we're going to keep going for another hour.
I know. Yeah.
But this has been a blast. As always.
Always.
All right. Well, thanks for stopping by, everybody, and have safe travels as you adventure forth.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Not Just NPCs Podcast.